culture to politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day despite the fact that there is great alarm at the United Nations. The United Nations has decided to take up the cause of racial reparations. No, I'm not kidding. They investigated 60 countries, including the United States, and suggested that in all 60, everywhere, people who have African origins have been discriminated against and have been victimized and need to get financial reparations and other sorts of reparations that are cultural, that have to do with the economy and your position for jobs and much more. And what is the United States supposed to do here? To provide reparations for the entire world? Or does each country provide its own reparations? And what about some of the countries themselves, which are doing poorly? We will consider this massive new UN project, which I hope the Biden administration has the good and important good sense to ignore, but don't count on it. We will get to that on the Michael Medved Show. There is, of course, more controversy about somebody who basically no one had ever heard of before, unless you were really a Olympics nut, Gwen Berry. I mean, the hammer throw, not exactly one of the most dynamic or important events in Olympic array, but here she is, now the most famous Olympian, and not in a particularly good way anywhere around. There's a great deal of controversy about who's un-American. Is it people like Dan Crenshaw, the hero of the Navy SEALs, somebody who lost an eye fighting for his country, and yes, fighting for decency against evil terrorists? Dan Crenshaw has called for her removal from the Olympic team. Others have said that people who make that claim are really the un-Americans. Which side should we come down on? It seems to me very obvious. We will also be talking about the Iranian nuclear threat, because with all of this going on, there is a real chance that the United States and Iran are far from making some kind of new deal or going to face a new confrontation. There were strikes against American soldiers in Iraq. Yes, we still have soldiers in Iraq. What is the Biden administration likely to be? What should it be? We'll be speaking to David Albright coming up. He has a new book, Iran's Perilous Pursuit of Nuclear Weapons. What can be done, if anything, to stop it? That and much more on the Medved Show. Is football gay? Now, you wouldn't think that that would even be a question. But there is a new ad from the NFL, a new ad that advertises that football is gay and football is transgender. A transgender football team? We will talk about that and much more on the Medved Show. First off, on the issue of Gwen Berry. And Gwen Berry, for people who have not been paying much attention, at the Olympic trials in Eugene, Oregon, where it was hotter than you can even describe, she managed to win a third place. And she went up to the podium. And because this was the trials for the American Olympic team, they were playing the national anthem. And when they were playing the national anthem, the first place winner stood at attention, hand over heart, listened to the music. The second place winner stood at attention, hand over heart, listened to the music. And Gwen Berry did not. By the way, those two Olympic winners, first and second place winners, were Deanna Price and Brooke Anderson. And they, of course, were completely upstaged, which is unusual and unfair, by the third place winner. Concerning some of the arguments back and forth on this, Meghan McCain, whose family knows something about patriotism, her grandfather and great-grandfather were both chiefs of naval operations and four-star admirals. Her father, you know who her father was. And here she speaks about Gwen Berry on The View, 6A.
I think in regards to the athlete protesting, I've spent the last year and a half hearing every argument possible and understanding why athletes protest in the United States of America, like Colin Kaepernick. The problem I have is this woman is doing this internationally, and if anyone just saw Vladimir Putin's recent speech when he met with President Biden, he's using the propaganda that America is an irredeemable crap hole against us, saying you think your country's so great over there? Look at BLM. Look at everything that's happening in your country. You don't even treat your people correctly. At the same time where he's literally imprisoning people, and we're having our enemies and propagandic dictators using our own propaganda against us, which in turn turns into a real national security. My other problem with this is I don't understand why we all can't have shared experiences in this space or have our own stories, because for some reason my relationship with the flag isn't allowed anymore. My love of the American flag, my love of the national anthem.
And then she explains partially where that love comes from. Listen.
When I was growing up, every year on Christmas, he would tell me a story about when he was in prison being tortured and his cellmate, a man named Mike Christian, had sewn the American flag using scraps of material he found in prison into his prison garden. Every morning, they would say this, the Pledge of Allegiance to what was sewn into his prison garb. One day, the Vietnamese captors found that and beat the living crap out of Mike Christian to the point that his eyes and his body was so badly injured that he could barely move. And the second that he was able to move again, do you want to know the first thing Mike Christian started doing? He started re-sewing the American flag into his prison garb so his cellmates could say the Pledge of Allegiance and remember what they were doing and what they were fighting for in prison for America. So excuse me if I don't think some of these athletes are representing America in the same way. And for some of us, I will die for this. I will die on this hill that it is not appropriate or patriotic to go to a foreign country where you're supposed to be representing America and act like it's just about you. It's not about you. It's about all of us.
Okay. Do you notice that Joy Behar is uncharacteristically silent? And that's probably a good move on her part. There's a piece by Sally Jenkins, who is a columnist for the Washington Post. And the headline she has on her piece is, Dan Crenshaw wants Gwen Berry kicked off the Olympic team. How un-American. Okay, it's not asking that she be locked up, put into jail, punished. It's that if you are going to make a decision that you want to represent your country, then you represent your country. If you want to represent some other country, represent some other country. If somebody wants to organize a non-national Olympic team, an Olympic team under the name of Black Lives Matter, I think it would be a terrible shame, a terrible thing to divide our country that way, according to race, when the entire purpose of the civil rights movement was to bring us closer together as Americans. In her column, which deserves more attention because it's awful, I mean, find it really, truly offensive. She says, as Berry remarked before the Olympic trials, in other words, before she competed in the hammer throw, it has bothered her that she wore the bold letters USA on her chest while being unable to express her convictions. How is she unable to express her convictions? If she wanted to call a press conference, she could do that. What she is saying is she had to wear a USA uniform or something that said USA on her chest if she was playing for the USA. Nobody requires that she do that. Nobody is threatening to imprison her or expel her or revoke her citizenship or revoke her franchise or anything like that. This entire idea of questioning loyalty to our great country that's given us everything. At a time because the country has not been perfect in the past, it's a terrible idea. I'll tell you one country that is very far from perfect in the present is the country of Iran. And what happens next with their nuclear program? We'll be speaking about that. Michael Medved Show. Last week, we had the a great honor of having on our radio show the former ambassador to the United Nations, former national security advisor in the Trump administration, John Bolton. And John Bolton had just reviewed a book that he strongly recommended. The book is called Iran's Perilous Pursuit of Nuclear Weapons. And I hadn't heard about it before John Bolton's endorsement, but it's a very important book, and it's extraordinarily detailed and well-researched and authoritative. It's published by the Institute of Science and International Security. I don't spell out the initials of that because the initials come out to be ISIS, but this is the good ISIS, as they make very clear. That is founded by David Albright, who joins us now. And you were ISIS before ISIS was ISIS, right?
No, that's right. We started in 1992, and ISIS is a beloved goddess of, you know, originating in Egypt and spreading throughout the Mediterranean area. So it is an unfortunate occurrence to attach the name ISIS to this horrible terrorist group.
Yes, indeed. However, you're famous for good reasons, not infamous for being murderous terrorists. The Institute of Science and International Security. You talk about Iran's perilous pursuit of nuclear weapons. I get emails about this all the time. People understand why Israel would care about Iran getting nuclear weapons. People question, why should ordinary Americans, so far away from Iran, where they are very far away from actually having nuclear weapons that they could deliver against the United States, why is this perilous for the United States of America?
Well, one thing is that we have a lot of interest in the Middle East. I mean, Israel is a very close ally, and we, you know, we have a kind of an obligation to protect them, but we also have to worry about oil supplies to not only ourselves, perhaps less than in the past, but to our close allies in Europe and Japan, and we have a responsibility to try to keep those oil flows going. We also, Iran is aggressive, and we don't know if Iran's going to build intercontinental ballistic missiles. I mean, right now, Iran isn't building nuclear weapons. I mean, we our book is about how we think they're preparing to do it. They're ready to do it. Pressure keeps them from doing it, but they're developing long-range missiles. They're seeking to develop through a cover of a civil space launch program missiles that could possibly reach the United States within several years. And if things don't go well, those missiles could be armed with nuclear weapons. And so it's a similar problem as we faced in North Korea, where they didn't pay enough attention to them, and then lo and behold, they're starting to fire off missiles that look like they could hit the continental United States and carry a nuclear weapon. So we don't want another North Korea in the Middle East that's threatening us from the other direction.
Is the conclusion of your book, the book is called Iran's Perilous Pursuit of Nuclear Weapons, is the final conclusion that they are pursuing nuclear weapons for aggressive purposes, or is it more likely, as many Iran sympathizers would say, that they're simply trying to get nuclear weapons for deterrence, to prevent an attack by Israel or the United States against them?
Well, I think no one is trying to attack them. I mean, I think there's certainly been attacks of their nuclear facilities, and there's been killing of their nuclear scientists. But no country has said it's going to attack Iran unless it's done out of fear that they're going to have nuclear weapons. So I think that Iran doesn't need nuclear weapons to defend itself. I mean, it also has a pretty strong kind of asymmetrical conventional army. It has ballistic missiles that can be used to launch conventional weapons. And it has proxies that can do its bidding. So in terms of its ability to defend itself against invasion, I think it's in a very strong position.
What's the best way to block this pursuit of nuclear weapons? In other words, It clearly has not, the participation by the Obama administration in the JCPOA, that has not stopped their nuclear program. What can?
Well, I think it's going to be a combination of things. One is, it's very important to make clear that if Iran seeks nuclear weapons, then there will be military strikes against many of its nuclear facilities and associated facilities. Could be missiles, could be communication, could be defense, radar defense systems. And so I think it's very important that the president make clear that's the way it is. I think you also have to push this negotiation much further, and I'm sure Ambassador Bolton talked about this, that Iran shouldn't have what's called a uranium enrichment program. It shouldn't have the means to make the material, the central material, the nuclear explosive material for nuclear weapons. I mean, we expect that in many allies. And so you have this irony that we don't want Saudi Arabia to have uranium enrichment. We don't want UAE to have it. We don't want South Korea to have it. But this JCPOA is allowing our enemy, Iran, to have it, or our adversary to have it. And so I think it's important to equalize this and push that Iran doesn't have enrichment. Not easy to get, but many things are not easy to get.
And beyond that, there is no requirement, wasn't for the initial JCPOA, for Iran to give up sponsorship of terror, which is continuing virtually every month, isn't it?
No, that's right. And so it's that. It's also, in the book, we describe three pillars of making nuclear weapons. One is this pillar of making the nuclear explosive material. Another is making the nuclear weapon itself. And then the third is delivering it. And the JCPOA really was trying to limit this nuclear explosive material pillar. It didn't eliminate it. It just tried to limit it. And with the sunsets in the deal, by 2030, the pillar could actually be taller and stronger. The JCPOA didn't touch the part of the pillar involved in making the nuclear weapon itself, or the pillar involved in delivering it, which centers on longer and longer range ballistic missiles, and that's also a problem. And one way
let me just ask you very quickly, Mr. Albright. I'm speaking to David Albright. There's breaking news from U.S. News World Report, everyone. Iran-U.S. violence poised to escalate following retaliatory strike. How and what would that escalated violence look like?
Well, I think some of what you saw under the Trump administration, where Trump ordered the killing of the head of the Quds Force.
Of Soleimani.
And so you could see an escalation of attacking key leaders of the other side. I mean, you could see Iran starting to attack the United States and its allies more.
I know that you have to go. Your book is available at our website at michaelmedved.com. It's called Iran's Perilous Pursuit of Nuclear Weapons by David Albright. He's the co-author of the Institute of Science and International. On the breaking news that we just mentioned from the Middle East, Iran-U.S. violence poised to escalate following retaliatory strike, the Biden administration and the leadership in Tehran are poised to ratchet up attacks following a retaliatory rocket strike by pro-Iranian forces in Syria against a U.S. base. Rockets landed at a U.S. military base in eastern Syria, prompting U.S. forces to return fire on Monday. As of yesterday, a day after the U.S. carried out airstrikes on Iranian-backed militias, according to a spokesman for the U.S.-led military mission in Syria. Now, people may be wondering, what are we doing in Syria? Because Syria is a complete disaster. There have been close to 1 million people who've been killed there, many of them brutally murdered, and several million who are refugees, and it's a mess. The reason we're in Syria is because of ISIS and ISIS' determination to kill Americans and killing multiple Americans, and one of the achievements that occurred in the Trump administration was basically dismantling ISIS. And we have some residual forces in Syria to prevent ISIS from reemerging and renewing its threat to our country and to civilization. A U.S. defense official with direct knowledge of the rocket fire said it is likely they were launched by Iranian-backed militias operating in the immediate area near Deir ez-Zor in eastern Syria. But the origin of the rockets has not been confirmed, and the official could not immediately say how many projectiles were fired. Some rockets did land within the immediate vicinity of U.S. troops, but early reports indicated there were no injuries. CBS is reporting U.S. troops based at an oil field in northeastern Syria came under rocket attack Monday, one day after U.S. jets launched airstrikes on facilities used by Iranian-backed militias in the Iraq-Syria border region. This is obviously all nightmarish. It almost surely does not end well for Iran, with their new hardline president, who is truly a war criminal and somebody who is involved in brutal executions of political opponents of the former supreme leader, the Ayatollah Khomeini. This is a difficult moment. And especially coming up to the 4th of July, is this a time for a military confrontation with Iran? And the question here, and it's a profound question, is the same kind of question came up in the exchange of airstrikes versus rockets. And you may remember there were several thousand rockets that were launched at Israel. And Israel responded with airstrikes in Gaza. What is a major power supposed to do? What is the United States supposed to do? We have interests. We have troops. They are under attack. Do we not respond because we don't want to see escalation? In the long term, the failure of any response, which is apparently not the case here, apparently the Biden administration is responding, the failure of any response would be far more dangerous. Well, the Secretary of State of the United States has to deal with all of this right now. That's Antony Blinken. It was Mike Pompeo who, even for people who are skeptics about the rest of the Trump administration, I think that the historical judgment on Secretary Pompeo will be very positive. He will be joining us tomorrow. And we'll talk to him about Biden now declaring that, quote, Iran will never get a nuclear weapon on my watch. Speaking about a nuclear weapon, there is continued discussion at a nuclear level about a hammer thrower that really nobody had ever heard of before. Most Americans had not heard of Gwen Berry, could not identify who she was, wouldn't pick her out of in a row of photographs. Wouldn't happen. And now, of course, she's famous and she's a symbol of free speech and dissent. Ted Cruz, who was also joining us later this week, Ted Cruz had this to say in his tweet. He said, "Why does the left hate America? Sure, we have our faults, but no nation in the history of the world has liberated more people from captivity, has lifted more out of poverty, has bled more for freedom, or is blessed more with abundance. God bless America." And honest to goodness, I do think it makes no sense for a Gwen Berry to say, look, I do not want to be representing the USA, which I don't feel represents me, in any kind of international sporting competition. She could say that. And she could probably get a certain amount of international attention for that. But she didn't. She wants to support the USA. She wants to take the money. She wants to take the support. She wants to take the fame and acclaim. At the same time, she is apparently embarrassed to be associated with this country, which is such a remarkable thing when you look at how many, literally hundreds of millions of people are willing to risk death in some cases just to come here, just to try to live in the United States where she was born. Berry remarked before the Olympic trials, as this column by Sally Jenkins in the Washington Post, that it has bothered her that she wore the bold letters USA on her chest. What letters would you like to wear? No, I'm serious. BLM? Does that do it for you? Honestly, this is madness. And in her column, Sally Jenkins tries to liken this to people who say that any kind of criticism of the United States is unpatriotic or basically un-American or somehow is always inappropriate. And she mentions Dr. King, and she mentions the response of extreme segregationists and people on the extreme side. That's not this. Dr. King invoked, not just in the I Have a Dream speech, but in all his major speeches, a profound sense of American patriotism, and he called upon America to live up to its founding principles, not to reject or to trash those principles, or people who overwhelmingly, by the way, in this country, ended up supporting Dr. King and his work. Sally Jenkins says, if Crenshaw and Cruz had their way, she would be punished. Maybe one day the compulsory patriotism crowd will wake up and peel themselves away from the language and intimidations of George Wallace. If that day ever arrives, black American athletes would have one less reason to take a knee or turn away from the flag. That idea, and this political issue, really, is the political issue of what we teach our children, what we teach each other about this country and its history, and what it means to the world, and what it means to each of us. And the idea that Gwen Berry, unlike people in the old evil empire of communism, is completely free as a celebrity and a wealthy celebrity, and should probably even have some of her endorsements maintained, to go anywhere in the world she wants to be. But now we have the UN saying everywhere in the world is racist, and George Floyd is a symbol to prove just what an international problem that is. We're going to be speaking about that with Wilfred Riley, professor at Kentucky State University, who has written about issues of race and racial justice. And those issues are going to play, like it or not, a significant role in the upcoming congressional elections. Gerald Seib suggests at the Wall Street Journal the Democrats are heading for a crash. Why? We will get to that with Gerald Seib and more coming up on The Medved Show.
The Michael Medved Show.
I'm just shocked.
On the Michael Medved Show, there is so much to feel grateful for as we approach the 4th of July. And look, I do want to make the case that one of the things we can feel grateful for is actually some of the foolishness that goes on in the United States on a regular basis, particularly concerning sports. I mean, sports is such a wonderful part of our national life. It truly is. And again, it's one of those things that binds Americans. I mean, one of the things that you can remember from old movies in World War II is people trying to follow the baseball box scores, which they would get very late when they're fighting in foxholes in Europe or in the South Pacific in the war. Baseball, football, basketball, all the sports, maybe even some Olympic sports, okay? Not a big fan of the Olympics, as I've said many times. But right now there is a new and very controversial ad campaign, which is almost entirely visual. But the title of the ad is Football is Gay. And who is trying to say that football is gay? I mean, I never heard that before. It's the NFL. Now, the ad is almost entirely visual. It's a black screen that flashes a bunch of words across it. Football is, And friends, it says football is lesbian, football is beautiful, football is queer, football is life, football is transgender, and football is bisexual. And the video ends with football is for everyone. The music behind those statements sounds like this. Yeah, football's transgender. Football is bisexual. And then it ends with football is for everyone, with people cheering. And it says that the NFL is supporting the Trevor Foundation, which is supposed to help prevent suicide of young gay teens. Okay. This, by the way, I'm not sure this is going to help whatever problems or challenges the NFL has right now. And in terms of whether it will or not, there's actually a soundbite that rock star Greg Tomlin recommended and picked out from a classic film that sounds like this. 20.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
Okay, bold strategy is from Dodgeball, which is not a great film, but that the bold strategy, Cotton, let's see if it pays off for them, is, I think, an appropriate comment for what's going on here. It's also an appropriate comment for appreciating that this is our level of debate. Okay, we now have Carl Nisbet, who has come out of the closet as the first openly gay active. He's a defensive end for Las Vegas, a player in the NFL. Congratulations to him. But this comes at a Pride Month where there actually was a kind of a surprising reaction by one city to the Pride Parade. They broke it up and used tear gas and beat up some of the Pride marchers. Which city? Istanbul. The story is that riot police in Turkey deployed tear gas and rubber bullets during the country's annual Pride Parade over the weekend, in an effort to interrupt the event, the latest in a string of government hostilities toward the LGBTQ community. The battalions of police officers sought out marchers and tried to stop them from gathering on a main center for shopping and tourism. The governor of Istanbul reportedly declined to provide a permit for the parade, which has been banned for the past 7 years. Hundreds of people still raised rainbow flags while marching through the city's Beyoğlu district. Rainbow is not a crime. Discrimination is, the marchers chanted. The strong action against the LGBTQ parade comes amid a difficult year for gay and transgendered people in Turkey. That, according to advocacy groups, has been marked by discrimination from top officials, including the president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, and the country's interior minister. The two officials reportedly lambasted LGBTQ people when students were protesting at a well-known Istanbul university, contending that the LGBTQ community does not exist. Remember, that was the position of Ahmadinejad, the former president of Iran, when he visited here. There is no such thing as LGBT. This country is national, spiritual, and walking toward the future with those values, so said Erdogan during remarks to members of his party. The Turkish government also removed itself from the Istanbul Convention. The convention is a European Union treaty that works to prevent violence against women. They said that preventing violence against women was somehow normalizing homosexuality. Does that mean that it is only homosexuals, according to the wisdom of the Turkish government? It is only homosexuals who would refrain from violence against women. The commentary in the Wall Street Journal on some of what we have to be thankful for in this country, and I think it's a great perspective, is from an adopted American, a Brit. His name is Gerard Baker, and He writes the following about the other collision of sports and values and politics. He says, last weekend, Gwen Berry, an African-American athlete, qualified to represent her country at next month's Olympics. When the national anthem was played, she turned away and covered her head with a T-shirt. Imagine if a Chinese athlete did that. Maybe raised a fist in defiance and then went on to a press conference and demanded that the government stop oppressing Uyghurs or threaten Taiwan or threatening Taiwan. Unless they have hammer-throwing competitions at re-education camps, it would be the last medal ceremony that athlete ever took part in. That's not only true of communist China. In most countries in the world, if a talented athlete has been trained, developed, and selected from thousands to represent the nation, then went and publicly trashed it all, the public opprobrium would be unrelenting. In America, you disrespect the institutions of your country and you get lionized by the media. You take a knee or turn away from the flag or refuse to take the field at the court or the court while the national anthem is played, and you get nodding assent from the authorities who control the sport. You can denounce what your country stands for and get elected to Congress. That's fine, writes Jared Baker. He says it's all part of the strange, perhaps ultimately unsustainable contradiction of living in a genuinely free society. But can we at least acknowledge that it is an extraordinary privilege? This failure to understand American greatness lies at the heart of a delightful paradox in the progressives' approach to immigration. And what he's talking about is they never ask about why people want so much to come here at the same time that no one is asking to get out with all of the criticisms of America. Jared Baker writes, so go ahead, enjoy your freedom to turn away from the flag, to denounce what it stands for. But could you maybe also just acknowledge for a moment how precious that freedom is? Perhaps take one day a year to reflect that despite your own antipathy, for nearly 250 years, people have been proud to call this country home. The 4th of July seems like a good day to remember what was really achieved back then and how astonishingly enduring it has proven. I think it's a beautiful point and an appropriate point. Again, with the fascinating thing is people have talked about whether Gwen Berry actually should represent the country in the Olympics. Nobody's talked about putting her in jail. Nobody's talked about taking away her right to compete. And that is a great tribute to the United States of America. Speaking of great tributes to the United States of America, we have a political system that is going to give the American people a pretty dramatic choice coming up. Gerald Seib in the Wall Street Journal says, by most measures, the Biden administration looks like it's doing okay, except there are warning lights, and the warning lights may be heralding a sweeping Republican tidal wave coming up in a year from this November. We'll talk with Gerald Seib of Wall Street Journal coming up in This Greatest Nation on God's Green Earth.